This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 142 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, sounds like you had, we were talking pre-show, but it sounds like you had an amazing weekend at AvGeek Fest out in Seattle.
In Seattle, Aviation Geek Fest 2016. What an amazing event. We got tours of Boeing. We went on a float plane ride. We just did so much great stuff. We'll have more about this in the next episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast, I'm sure. But you know, one of the activities they had, David, is they had a sort of a drone zone event. Now, this was conducted indoors, but they had a bunch of quadcopters, a couple of them FPV, and the attendees had an opportunity to, for most of them, fly for the first time, or at least try not to crash for the first time. So it was a great way to get a lot of aviation enthusiasts some firsthand experience with some small quadcopters. So that was very successful.
Very cool. And, well, we're going to do a little bit different tonight. We're going to have a couple of news stories, but we have a guest. And in order to bring us coverage, since Max and I really can't be everywhere every time, we recruit people. And I'd like to introduce our guest, Mike Daniels. You want to go through a little bit of the bio, Max?
Mike says he's been designing, building, and flying model aircraft since the 70s. And that's included things like free flight, control line, RC airplanes, and helicopters. In multirotors, starting in 2013 with a new Phantom. He's also built an F-550, which he designed and printed a lot of his own parts for. Currently flying a unique Typhoon Q-500 and also an Aries Ethos Q-130. And Mike, I think you've got a Typhoon H that's due to arrive soon.
Yep, Typhoon H. The rumor has it it's going to ship next week, and we've been waiting for a couple of weeks for this to ship at this point, I think, because it keeps kind of getting pushed back, but no, I think it's a go.
Now, Mike also has a lot of manned aviation experience. He's got an FAA pilot certificate to fly single-engine land and sea planes. He also holds an FAA repairman certificate for light sport airplanes with a maintenance rating. Mike also is online to a great extent these days. He shares his experiences by blogging at blog.mikeflies.com, and he's also created an online e-paper called the UAV Daily. Mike, how long has the UAV Daily been around?
It's actually only been out just a few weeks now. It's something I've just been kind of working together as I venture more into trying to do some drone stuff.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear you say it's only been a little while. I was worried that it was something that, you know, maybe I'd been missing, but so it's new. We'll check that out for sure.
About 3 weeks, and I haven't really pushed advertising or anything on it yet. It's coming soon, though.
So the reason why Mike's here is Mike had the opportunity to be part of the Drone Dealer Expo in April 11th through the 13th in Orlando. He spent the week before at Sun and Fun, but we're going to talk drones tonight. So let's start with, what was the Drone Dealer Expo?
Well, the Drone Dealer Expo, this was a first-year event, and it's put on by the company that puts the big, huge, I guess it's the largest drone event in the U.S., the big one out in Vegas. Of course, that name eludes me at the moment, of course. But it was something where they thought they needed a show for the dealers, for the retail guys to come in. So the purpose of all of this was to see what they could do to boost drone sales for hobby shops and so forth. And they did a lot of different little seminars and panels. it was pretty good. It was a 3-day event. I liked that they started kind of late in the day at like 10 o'clock or 10:30-ish. We had some pretty interesting panels. It was fun. I had a good time. I learned a lot.
Well, we should mention that our friend Tim Trott was also at the Drone Dealer Expo, and he recorded some interviews that he's just sent us. We haven't processed them yet. So you can look forward to some more exciting stuff from the Drone Dealer Expo from us coming up pretty soon. But this week, we'll talk with Mike. Mike, what was the audience like? The people participating in the expo, what kind of folks were they? What were they interested in?
Well, it was I was surprised at the variety of folks, because it was everybody from your mom and pop hobby shop guys to some online people. I had a great conversation today with a guy who's been flying drones for quite a while, apparently for a fire department. And so there was some guys there for agricultures. There was, you know, a lot of professional pilots, a lot of guys with 333s, a lot of guys without 333s. So it was more than just dealers. There was a lot of interesting people there. And of course, there were some representatives, some of the big manufacturers and that there as well, Parrot and Unique and so forth.
I'm kind of curious just about sort of the age of the audience. Was it really mixed, or was it skewed towards young folks or old folks, or what did you observe?
I would say the general audience, as far as not the people putting on the show, the panels, but the right. general audience was, and what they were listing as the prosumer guys, if you go through their thing, it was, so we're talking 30 to 60-ish, which I thought was a little old for what I expected, but don't be wrong, there was a few young guys there too, but it seems that, according to what they said anyway, the what they consider prosumer is the price range where the drones go are used more, because at below $1,000, they're claiming that those drones are mostly hobbyist. And when you hit this $1,000 mark, they're claiming like 60% of those drones, $1,000 and up, $1,000 to $2,000, are used for commercial purposes. Hmm. And only 40%-ish are hobbyists. So that's what they're calling the prosumer range. And, of course, when you get to the 7,000, 15,000, the really high-end stuff, that's all commercial.
I guess, David, that kind of makes sense. Does it to you?
Yeah. I don't know if $1,000 is high, but what's a DJI for, Phantom 4? I guess that's about 1,000.
14.
So, yeah, I guess that would be the top of the hobbyist market, and any of the above that, yeah, I guess that's about right breakdown.
Yeah, and they didn't just make this up. They did a whole survey, and they had all the data on the people they surveyed, how many they were, what the sample was, and, you know, then this is what they've come up with.
We see drone racing, FPV racing, seems to be skyrocketing in popularity. Was there any action pertaining to that at the Drone Dealer Expo?
Yeah, they blocked off a section of the parking lot, and the end of day one, they did what they call the Drone Racing Expo, and or just a demonstration of it. And this stuff's really, really neat. Every time I see it, and this is the first time in person, I think I really want to try this, although I know I'm going to crash, but that's just part of it. These guys were crashing, too, so it looked like a lot of fun. And they claimed that it's from a retailer standpoint, drone racers are your guys, because they're going to crash all the time, so they'll constantly be buying parts.
A good revenue stream.
Yeah. But it's so much fun, and I learned a lot because I sat in on a couple of the panels that were based on drone racing. It was just really interesting. I didn't quite realize this. One of the things that supposedly happened this week is now there's a deal with ESPN, and it's going to be on broadcast on ESPN this year. But when you look at this and you look at the regulations, it violates several of the FAA regulations, but they're still doing it.
I guess it is, unless you're racing indoors, there's some issues to be dealt with. Yeah, everybody's interested in it. You know, as we've said, you know, if it's got a motor in it, people will race it regardless of what it is. And drone racing is pretty exciting. I still think they need to work a bit on the sort of the spectator end of things, making it enjoyable, more enjoyable for spectators. And certainly for those watching on TV or after the fact. But I think they're making strides there.
Yeah, I think from what I understand, what they're working on is making the video footage a little bit clearer and better. If you saw what these guys are actually flying by, I don't know how they can fly by what they see, but they're working on making that clearer and better so they can kind of stream this to the people watching it. And they're talking like this is going to be like NASCAR and stuff, but you know, NASCAR, you got a car, in a real estate on a car, you got a couple inches you can sell for 20 grand or whatever to a sponsor. I don't quite know how you're going to get sponsors for race teams on drone racing, but I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Here's something they could do. That on the stream, they could put a crawl line at the bottom with the sponsors.
Yeah, that would probably work. That's a good idea. That would probably work, yeah. But, yeah, decals on the racing drones, that's probably a non-starter at this point.
Yeah. These guys make these things as small and compact as they can. They don't they don't want to add nothing to them. So they're not even running, you know, balanced light polys and stuff. They're just running the, you know, the kind of light polys that blow up when they get smacked.
Yeah.
It's crazy because they go as light as possible. One of the interesting things that I learned that I never thought of is when you look at these, the cameras are tilted at like this 30 degree angle on them. And that's because when they're flying fast forward, right, that's, you know, about the angle they're flying at. And so when they go to land these things and they're all they got their goggles on and all they can see is what the camera sees, they're looking at the sky.
Right. So that makes it a little tough. What about the industry in general? Did you develop any kind of perceptions or any takeaways as to the mood of the crowd in terms of how the industry is progressing and where we stand today?
Well, it's from what they're saying is we're still at the, you know, on the climbing side of the bell curve here. We're, you know, we've got a long ways to go before the industry matures. One of the things that they mentioned that I thought was interesting and I never thought of is that they were predicting all these huge drone sales for Christmas. And then right just before Christmas, the FAA announced the drone registration. And they feel that that might have affected the drone sales some. That some people might have thought, well, I'm not going to go buy a drone for little Bobby now because now I got to deal with this FAA stuff.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I wonder if there's any data on that that, you know, supports that.
They didn't seem to have any, but it was interesting that I never thought about it, but the timing was kind of, when you look back at what happened, the timing was a little interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think of it that way at the time either.
Because we were pretty shocked on how much people did get register the drones, how effective the registry was. It didn't, it's interesting from a business standpoint that the businesses might have taken a hit.
Well, now what they're saying here at this, you know, it's part, you know, because this was, you know, to teach you how to improve your sales and stuff. And I thought it was pretty interesting that what they're saying is when you sell a drone to a customer at a, you know, brick and mortar hobby shop, that you just have them registered on the spot. You hand them an iPad and you put them on the FAA website and right there at the checkout counter while they're checking out, you just sign them right up and get their number and print it out for them. And here you go.
Yeah, that really shouldn't be too difficult.
No, it's pretty easy. I'm all registered and stuff. Yeah. I had a lot of RC friends that were been flying RC stuff in helicopters forever that are dead against it, you know.
Yeah.
Is my dog bothering you guys?
I can hear your dog. No, that's fine.
Yeah, but these guys don't have pilot certificates. So I have a pilot certificate. So yeah. I figured that I've got maybe a little more to lose than they do. So I registered mine. It's no big deal. I don't care. It's not like the FAA doesn't know who I am anyway, right?
Sure. Since you're also a pilot of manned aircraft, do you have any thoughts on how that affects the way you view unmanned aircraft versus the guy that maybe is an expert, even a very proficient flyer of a quadcopter, multi-rotor, or something like that? Do you characterize your viewpoint as being much different from that other guy's?
I think it might be a little different, yeah. And it's I kind of see that, and I was shocked at how many pilots were at this expo, actually, people that were actually licensed pilots. I think that the people that are pilots are less afraid of the FAA regulations and the 333s and that. It's like, oh, it's just another form to fill out. And I feel that I have maybe a little more respect, if just because I have more to lose, maybe, for the FAA regulations than that. So it's like I'm not above calling a tower or contacting the airport manager at Sun and Fun here in 2014, you know, to get permission to do a little bit of flying there before the show, of course. And to me, it's no big deal. You just call them up. And I think some of the guys that are the hobbyist side of this are not familiar with dealing with that airspace and that just won't bother to do it or they'll go somewhere else to fly.
Hmm. How about products? Did you see any interesting products at the show?
Yeah. Well, I got a hold of the Typhoon H, which is my baby. It's that was really, really cool. There was one of these huge drones there that you can hang like a, you know, a $30,000 Sony or $70,000 Sony movie camera from. They claimed it would lift 450 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
It was pretty big. Of course, they also said that it would probably only do it for about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it would be out of battery, right? But no, the cameras that they lift are obviously, you know, they're more like 20 pounds or 10 pounds. But, you know, the payload they have and the way they control the gimbal on it is just, and it's some pretty fascinating stuff. So there was everything from the, you know, the little $40 toy drone. All the way up to super high-end stuff there, and even a fixed-wing drone.
Do you have any comments on any of the panels that you attended?
The first panel that I sat in on day one had to do with the current status of the FAA regulations, and it started out simple enough, but it didn't take too long where feedback from the audience and stuff, it was, you know, it went from just three people up on stage talking about it to the whole room having this mass discussion. I kept having visions of being in a bar or something. It was interesting. And
that sounds like a good thing, right?
Yeah. I'm not going to say it wasn't productive or anything or that it was crazy. It was just, you know, everybody's pretty passionate, obviously, about it. And nobody really knows for sure what's going to happen when the Part 107 comes out. But everybody's kind of looking forward to it.
Was it contentious or was it civil?
It was mostly civil. I'm surprised at how many people don't understand the 333 totally. These guys think you need a pilot certificate to get a 333, which you do not. You just need to be a business, you know, right? However, to fly a drone under the 333, that person has to have a pilot. So a business could have the 333, and they could hire a pilot to fly the drone.
Right.
But with the Part 107 coming out, it's going to free up a lot of that. The 333 is actually more restrictive flying than hobby flying when you look at it. And of course you can file for, you know, different COAs and that to make it a little bit better for you. So when the 107 comes out, they're claiming that, you know, for your typical guy flying a DJI Phantom 4 or a Typhoon H or unique, you know, a Q500 or something, that they'll be able to fly and do the weddings or whatever they're doing, shoot the video and photography, as long as they stay within the guidelines and, you know, be able to make some money on that. And you won't need a 333 unless you're going to be doing some of the other exemptions where, like, well, maybe if you need to fly at night or something beyond the limits they put on it, then you'll need the 333 and, of course, to file for the COAs and that.
Well, was there some discussion about a drone operator's certificate and what that might look like?
Oh, yes, there was. And of course, once again, nobody really knows, but these guys are speculating. We had a aviation lawyer up there on the panel and some really knowledgeable guys. And a lot of people have been stating that this drone pilot certificate or operator certificate, whatever it's going to be, that the FAA is going to issue, that it'll just be like a written test you can do online. And these guys are pretty convinced it'll be a written type test, but that it's not going to be online. It's going to have to be something you have to show up in person for. You know, because they want to make sure that it's actually you taking the test. A main purpose for having a pilot involved with this at all, according to what I learned, has to do with the FAA background check anyway. So they're going to want to see you. They want you to show up. And so my guess is it's going to be like at a CAT center or something like you would for a private pilot's license or any, you know, flight certificate you would get from the FAA.
Interesting. Well, it sounds like overall a great event. Did you walk away from that with a good feeling about the value that you got from it and maybe where the industry is going or something else?
No, I actually did. I walked away from it almost every day. I went the 3 days. And I was very excited, and I think it's great. I think it's a good event. The odds are pretty good that if I'm around next year this time, that I'll go do it again. They plan on doing it here in Orlando again next year. But they're going to do it at a different time because there's another big event, drone event in California this weekend. I got a lot of value from it. I learned a lot. I met some great and interesting people. You know, I met a woman that worked at Parrot. She did some of the panel stuff, and Liz, and she has some great insight, and I learned a lot from her. And then, of course, Steve at Unique, who let me fondle the Typhoon H. wouldn't let me fly it, though. And I tried to babysit it for him. He wouldn't let me do that either. But it's pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm going to go again next year. And I hooked up with a drone distributor that is going to help me get my online store going. So,
yeah, well, let's mention well, we have an opportunity here to mention the sites and where you have properties online where people can find out more about you and benefit from the stuff that you have out there.
Well, I appreciate that. You already mentioned the UAVdaily.com and my blog at blog.mikeflies.com. But I'm going to be putting some more information up, and I currently have some recommendations from Amazon on www.mikeflies.com. And that will be where my official store is at, not the non-Amazon store, but the real drone store is at. And pretty much it's not going to be a full-tilt hobby shop. I'm only going to offer stuff for sale that I actually test and play with, or friends of mine test and play with, stuff that I trust and think is a good product for somebody to use. And then I'll be doing some tutorials and some videos, and it's what I do anyway, is training. So I'll be making everything I can to make it useful and to help people come into drones if that's what they're looking for, and they're looking for some guidance. So I'll have free stuff up for that.
All right. Very good. Well, David, what do you think? Sounds like it was a great event.
Oh, I think so. I appreciate Mike going to the trouble of spending time and enjoying himself and only to get to talk about it later. I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, we'll have some interviews that Tim Trott recorded from the event. We'll have those in an upcoming episode. Maybe we'll have a special episode just for that. We'll see how that goes. But David, we have a few interesting news items that we wanted to cover.
Yeah, and the first one I'd like to say is, Mike had commented earlier that there was a possible drone racing deal with ESPN. Well, I'd like to thank our Slacker teams for posting it. CNET posted it just this evening that it's confirmed that ESPN will be drone racing. So that's breaking news. And Max, you need to get that breaking news ticker tape thing we keep talking about.
Okay.
But besides that, let's talk a little bit about hydrogen-fueled drones. This was from PRN Newswire. The Hydrone 1800 leads its way in a new UAV era. This is your thing. You like batteries and hydrogen fuel stuff and fuel cells.
This is something from Micro Multicopters Aero Technology, MMC. And this Hydrone 1800 is, they say, a hydrogen-fueled drone. It's got a long flight time, 4 hours. They say it takes just a minute to recharge the thing. It's got a flight radius up to 100 kilometers with a live video stream. That's fairly interesting. The article and in their webpage, I don't see specifically that these are fuel cells, but that's the only kind of hydrogen power I can imagine.
Well, I know the other hydrogen power, but I don't think the drone would really survive it.
No, I don't think so. Mike, have you heard anything about these? I mean, if this is a technology that really works well, and as long as you can get hold of some hydrogen, this seems like it would really change the game in many ways.
I have not heard about the hydrogen fuel cell drones. It is, like you, I'm very, very interested in alternate fuels, and the hydrogen fuel's a big one, and I love electric vehicles as well. But I could go into a whole thing about fuels and so forth. But if you get a chance, listen to what Bill Gates says about alternate energy. He's got some interesting views.
Oh, yes, yes.
And a little dovetail into the show. What was the conversations about batteries and battery life and stuff, Mike? Did that come up? Is that still a huge hurdle as far as everyone's concerned?
Batteries keep getting better for the most part. The technology is advancing pretty quickly for the most part, I would think. Some of the companies like Unique, as much as I hate to say, when you look at the H, They're starting to switch to their own connectors, right? So now you just can't, like the H I'm getting, you just can't plug it into my fast charger I got. You got to use their slow charger. And some people are a little bummed about that. So you got to manufacture these funky connectors to match up with what they got.
Oh, how Apple of the...
Exactly. I've been involved with the LiPoly batteries that we use in the model aircraft since, the beginning of that. And they've come such a long way. I mean, I've actually had LiPoly batteries burst into flames on a charger, and you don't see that anymore. The new balanced and monitored batteries and the new chargers and stuff are really, really safe. So only the drone racer guys are flying the older type batteries now.
Yeah, I think it's all about the control. That's the problem that these hoverboards had. They didn't have the monitoring system. I think that was the issue with the fires with those. But those sure didn't do the lithium battery industry in general any good by being in the press so much with those. So,
no, they did not.
No. So we'll have to watch this hydrogen-powered concept, and as that develops, as that technology moves along.
And usually that converts it into water. So, I mean, so that's a good thing.
I guess there's a downside. I guess if we have quadcopters and things that have these really, really extended flight times, I guess the downside is that stupid people can do stupid things for longer.
For extra time.
Yeah, but usually the really big batteries with extended flight times, that's on the really high-end stuff.
That's true.
And, you know, what they're talking with the future of this is going, and where I think the hydrogen drone and stuff would really fit in well, is with the agriculture. If they could have a drone that would wake itself up in the morning, fly over your crops, identify the areas that need water, you know, and they're talking machine-to-machine internet, right? So it would talk to the computer that ran the irrigation system, and it would just water the areas that need it. It might catch on where the insects are at, and, you know, it could go spray the areas where it needs that, you know, and it would land and charge itself and kind of do this autonomously is kind of what they're looking at. So, you know, when you're flying acres and acres and acres of crops, you know, you're going to need a little more juice. And, of course, these will probably be like fixed wings, I'm guessing, is a better suited for something like that than a quadcopter or a hexcopter or an octocopter, but
yeah,
a rotor wing.
Real game changer.
Yep.
Well, David, Google is in the news again.
Yeah, Google X patented a drone rescue service with their Project Wing drone. They basically set it up so that you call, instead of calling 911, you press a button and the drone would deliver your first aid kit within minutes of wherever you are. So we'll put a link to the show notes. It's pretty simple, but it's kind of, we've talked about using it for rescues and stuff. And like Mike just said, this is sort of another one of those autonomous thing that, you know, in the national park, you put the drones, like you used to have phone call boxes and you hit the button and away you go. So pretty interesting technology. And of course, this wouldn't be an episode of the UAV Digest without our This Week in FAA News. Huh, Max?
Yeah, we have an article from The Hill. Lawmakers seek to ensure FAA bill won't preempt local drone laws. Now, I think this is great. But what's happening is we're seeing some action in the U.S. Senate. And these are amendments offered by different people as part of the FAA reauthorization bill. And the people who are in favor of this are basically saying that they would create a federal preemption for state and local laws that are related to the design, manufacture, testing, licensing, registration, certification, operation, and maintenance of UAS. What that means is that the states and local governments could not enact laws in those areas. Now, they do say that local governments would still be able to enact privacy laws and safety laws as long as they don't specifically mention drones. So it's got to be a broadly applicable kind of a law.
Yay.
I think this is, and I don't know if this is going to survive, and I know not everybody is in favor of this in the Senate. In the House does not have, at this point in time, as we understand it, any comparable amendments to their version of the FAA reauthorization. But I think this is just terrific. I think this is what we need.
Yeah, well, it's the let's nail this down, that who's got what authority over what airspace, et cetera. It's the argument that Professor Vanderhoof was so enjoying on The Good Wife the other week, that the FAA, their Senate is actually laying down the parameters on who gets to talk about what. So what do you think, Mike?
Well, we know that the FAA has laid claim to the airways as long as they've been in existence. So you don't own the air over your building or your business or your house. And I think it's a good thing that they're, you know, trying to keep it that way where, you know, the state laws and the local laws, because that stuff's getting a little crazy, although not all the states are getting as crazy. But as a drone flyer, I don't know how often you guys travel around and fly, but I travel quite a bit, and it's like everywhere I go, I got to check the local laws. It's kind of a hassle.
Yeah, I think that in this country, in any country, consistency is really important. I can see the need maybe for privacy laws to vary a little bit depending on the circumstances in the, you know, in that locality. But in terms of flying in the airspace, yeah, I think it needs to be consistent across the country.
Yeah, I get the privacy laws too, but if you're 500 foot over somebody's property or whatever the, you know, the new 107 standards are going to state, you know, then I think that's privacy enough. Maybe, I don't know, maybe not.
Mm-hmm. All right, David, do we have a video of the week?
We do have a video of the week, and this came from our friend Peter from Extended. I'm not sure what to make of this one. I'm not even sure that we probably should be promoting it, but it's definitely different, and it's a multi-copter with a chainsaw attached on the bottom of it, and the chainsaw's working, and they're using it to cut trees and stuff. So it's kind of a nightmare, that the kind of thing that pilots like our friend Rob have, where you can visualize this thing chasing after him in a forest.
Yeah, this is a, is this a Finnish, I forget, production? It's done in the snow, so a couple of snowmen sort of bite the dust from the chainsaw as it flies around. But this sort of, people love this sort of thing. It's got 2 million views as we record this, so it does have a lot of popular appeal. It's certainly not recommended practice. There aren't other people encouraged to try something like this who really have no business messing around with this kind of power, but there it is.
Check it out. The other one we sort of have was DJI had a Phantom 4 videotape Facebook Live. So we'll put another link on that from The Verge in the show notes about Zuckerberg's presentation using a drone over the stage. I worry when I see things like that, just because I appreciate the competence of the pilots, but you know, it always looks like it's on the verge of something going wrong.
Yeah, something could always go wrong.
So we only have one listener feedback this week, and this is from our listener, Rob Mark. Rob tweeted out today, I think I just saw my first drone in flight. We were about 2,500 feet landing south at MCO. Not super close, but close enough. Well, we'd like to congratulate Robert for having his first UFO sighting, and we'd like to know what kind of drone it was he actually saw, and we'll be following up with him to find out if he's going to file a report with the FAA.
Mike, have you encountered any drones while you've been flying?
No. Well, let me rephrase that. I've seen predators take off and land while I've flown.
Okay.
Does that count? I mean, I fly a lot in North Las Vegas Airport, and Creech Air Force Base is a place that we fly by, and there it's the training grounds, and they fly out of there all the time.
So do they fly in their own restricted airspace where you're not supposed to be?
You don't want to know.
You don't want to know.
Here's the deal. At that point, they're flying in their restricted airspace. The military's pretty good about that, the keeping them restricted areas. And you'll have them in the MOAs if you haven't run across those. There's a lot of those out west. But I have a friend who works for a manufacturer of very large radio-controlled aircraft that is sold to the military. And their test field is in general aviation airspace. And they've been flying out off their field every day for 10 or 15 years. And I've flown by there, and there's a little mention on the sectional that says unmanned aircraft area, but you never really think too much about it. And I've never seen them there, but when he went to work for him, he's like, oh yeah, we fly every day, and all the pilots we know are all concerned about this. It's like, they're already in the airspace.
I guess you got to be careful and know what's around. Situational awareness is important as always. All right, well, we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. We especially want to thank our guest, Mike Daniels. Again, Mike, thanks for coming on the show. Give us the websites real quickly where folks can follow more about you.
Well, thanks for having me. And if you go to www.mikeflies.com, it takes you to pretty much everything. And you can always email me and reach out from there. If you want to know more about my motorcycle business or any of that other stuff.
Oh, there's a topic for another podcast, I guess.
Well, that's how I make my money.
Oh, well, all right. Well, we'll talk more about that after the show, I guess. But for now, we want to thank you. This has been episode 142. You can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Show notes are at the UAVDigest.com/142 for this episode. Of course, you can always find us online in the social media. David, where do folks look?
They can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. And we want to encourage you to become part of the Slack team and go to the UAVdigest.com/team and join our conversations. There's been a lot of really interesting conversations this week, back and forth on robotics, et cetera. So it's a little more diverse than drones, but it's all the same universe. So I would recommend doing that. And of course, if you want to get a hold of either Max or I, you can get us at feedback@theuavdigest.com or david@theuavdigest.com or max@theuavdigest. And you ask, how can I help the show? Well, you can do it a couple of ways. One, leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. You can always get some swag from theuavdigest.com or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. Links to those on our homepage. So with that, I guess I'll say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.